Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week having a good bit of theme park chat. I'm Bex, this is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And we are nipping over the pond again this week. We're joined by our good US friend, Mark Rosenzweig from 3DX Scenic.
Hey, everyone, how are you?
Hello, Mark.
We are good, and you're here for a very specific reason. You were on the podcast not that long ago, and we kind of had a bit of a mental idea at the end where we said, oh, I'll tell you what would be good, Mark, if you could give us some great US theme park road trips, because you are well-travelled, globally over theme parks, but particularly in the US, obviously, as your home country. And you said, yeah, I can do that for you guys. So you very kindly have come back on today, and we're going to do it. So we're looking at theme park trips that we can take as UK theme park nerds, which specifically don't involve going to Orlando, which is the default for a lot of us as Brits. Mm-hmm. But if you're listening to Parkcast, you're probably a bit more than just a Disney adult, Universal theme park nerd. You're probably a bit more interested in theme parks in general. And of course, America is home to some incredible theme parks, and we can really kind of branch out and get some amazing roller coasters in if we go and visit them. But I know, Kev, you probably find the same, it's quite daunting. You look at the US, you're like, okay, well, where do I start?
Bearing in mind, our country is teeny tiny in comparison, and we complain about having to spend a couple of hours driving down to Chessington.
Yeah, yeah.
Never mind looking at the US going, well, surely I need like 3 months to kind of visit every theme park, but that's not the case.
And what is the UK the size of, say, California? I'm
not even sure it's that big, to be honest. I mean, you could probably get from the north coast of Scotland down to the south coast in what, 10 hours, maybe?
Probably.
Yeah, so they're probably pretty similar.
Yeah.
Which is nuts to think about it. Yeah. And we do. We generally look, when we look at going to America, it's like, there's so many to fit in. I think because these days we are obviously blessed with having the internet and YouTube, and we can get shown these amazing vlogs and all these different American theme parks, whether you've got Six Flags, Cedar Point, you know. And in my brain, I'm going, how on earth
where do
I get
I
from
start?
That one? Yeah. You know, Kings Island, I want to go up there. But wait, this is the Tampa Bay, that you know, Busch Gardens that's down in Florida. Oh, how do we do it, Mark? Where do we start?
I always say, I grew up, I'm going to say I was on the other side of the fence. I was watching the world's greatest roller coaster thrills in 3D, those old VHS tapes back in the early to mid 90s. And I was watching the footage of, the big one, the Pepsi Max big one at the time, and Nemesis. And what a year 94 was, because you also had Brick Manor opening their stand-up coaster that same year. So. Yeah. And I'm thinking, wow, I have to get over there. But I didn't realize there were all these people over there watching Magnum XL 200 and Mean Street and all of these iconic rides that were opening in the U.S. in the late 80s into the 90s and beyond. So I would say above it, to open this, is that the U.S. park scene, theme park scene, is overwhelming, both for the quantity, but also because of how vast the country is and how they are spread out. But what I aim to do today, and to help all the British park fans, is let's talk about how we can group parks together in a manageable is the key word here, because you're on vacation, you're on holiday, you're spending money. You should enjoy yourself. You should get the return on investment, and you shouldn't kill yourself by driving 14 hours a day, driving through the night to get to all these places. These parks, the big successful parks, they're here to stay. So they're going to be around. So really just picking a geographical region, and beyond the parks, also enjoy the cities, visit the museums, eat the indigenous food. The U.S. has a lot of weird food. If you think the U.K. has weird food, we have you beat. I guarantee.
Well, we know Americans think our food is bland, Mark. So I think we're...
Right here in Cincinnati, we will give you a plate, a half pound of spaghetti noodles, dump a bunch of chili on it, and put about a quarter pound of cheese on top of that. So we are not afraid of our, we're very proud of our culinary creations here, I should say. So really looking forward. Let's kind of chop the country up and discuss how a successful trip. And by the way, these trips can be tailored. If you have a week, you could easily do a week. If you have greater ambitions, you could do a 2-week trip. Some of these trips can be round trip, whereas you pick one international airport, you do a car hire and you end at the same one. Others, you pay the premium to do a one-way car hire and you drop it off at another airport. Mm-hmm. Typically, if you have less time, the one-way car hire is going to be the way to go so that you can really maximize which parks you visit on a trip.
Okay. Could you think the east side of America would be a good place to start, Mark? Because it's close, I say closer, but if you think of like California, compared to if you're landing in New York, there's going to be a long time difference. I know from like if we've got people traveling to other places, you've got to get used to the jet lag, haven't you? That's going to take a few days the further you go. So would it be easy to start on the east side of America and do that as it's slightly closer, maybe?
I would say so. You know, and just like running down the coast, you've got so many large scale international airports. So really, you're not stuck with just picking one. Typically, when Americans fly to the UK, it's 9 out of 10 times it's Heathrow. You know, you're going to Heathrow. There's not a lot of other. If you're coming from New York, you could theoretically go to Gatwick, I guess. But for coming to America, you've got Boston Logan, you've got two international airports in New York, Newark Liberty and JFK. And then you go down to the Philadelphia has an international airport. That's a hub for American Airlines, which is a code share with British Airways. So there's a lot of service there from London and likely Manchester as well. And then you move down to DC and you've got Dulles, and that's a hub for United. So there's a lot of options where you can start and or end your trip on the East Coast moving up to the Northeast. So you guys want to start with Boston and the New England area?
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds fun. New England is one of those places that it gets kind of themed in theme parks a lot, doesn't it? Well, it does in Europe anyway. We see a lot of like New England theming, and we have sort of places that are themed to New England, but this is the real life version of it. So what can we find there?
Yeah, so you would be flying into Boston Logan, which is literally right in the city. It's right across the harbor from downtown. So it's so easy if you wanted to take a chill day, say, to get adjusted to the time. You get a hotel in the Faneuil Hall area, the Quincy Marketplace area, which is a tourist hub. But Boston is a very compact, very easy to walk city. And it has great mass transit, which America is not well known for. But a lot of the older East Coast cities do have subways, or in Boston, it's called the T. So it's very easy to get around. You can get a lobster dinner. You can kind of start your trip with some good seafood, which Boston is very well known for. And then the New England region historically had dozens and dozens of parks. It was a big classic, whether it was along the coast, just north of Boston or just south of Boston, all the way back to the center of Massachusetts. There were a lot of Picnic Grove parks. Most of those no longer exist, but New England has a very diverse mix of theme parks for enthusiasts to choose from. The largest of which, and I'm realizing now it's not on my list, but it should be obvious, is Six Flags New England, which is located in Agawam, Massachusetts. It's about a 2-hour drive west of Boston. And this park has two critically acclaimed headliner coasters in Wicked Cyclone, which is a Rocky Mountain Construction remake of the old Riverside Cyclone, and then Superman the Ride, which is one of the top steel coasters that I've ever been on. It's a custom Intamin mega coaster that has just one of the best layouts ever. It's got airtime hills, underground tunnels, helices. It's the total package. It's over a mile of track. The park's right on the Connecticut River. It's got a great mix of flat rides. It's got an in-gate water park. So it's definitely a full day park, especially for someone visiting for the first time.
And this is the sit down coaster, isn't it, Mark? Because there's quite a few Superman attractions, coasters in America, isn't it? So sometimes we can get confused which one is which, but this is your sit down one, isn't it? Because there is a flying
coaster.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah,
so, and then a lot of the other parks, see, New England still has a lot of family owned parks, which is very cool in my opinion, just to see that, sort of like Paulton's Park in the UK. You know, it has a different flavor, a unique feel to it. So if you head up the coast to the state of Maine, which is absolutely gorgeous, especially in summer, it's called Vacation Land is its nickname, and very, very suitable for that because it's just a place. The temperatures are great. It's, you know, Fahrenheit, about 75, 80 degrees in the summer, and then it can go down to the low 60s, upper 50s. You've got two parks within 5 miles of one another in Funtown Splashtown, USA, which its headliner is a Custom Coasters International Wood Coaster Excalibur. And then you've got Palace Playland, which is a classic seaside park, akin to like, you know, what you would find in Brighton or any of those type of seaside resorts in the UK. They're an ideal combo for one day. You can easily do them both in one day. And the city of Portland is about 5 miles north of these two parks. And it's a great old historic downtown, very walkable, nice shopping, great restaurants and all that. And then we would move up to the region called the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And in New Hampshire, it's a resort area 2 to 3 hours north of Boston. And there are two theme parks there, both tailored to kids in the 3 to 10 year old age range, but enthusiasts are welcome as well. Santa's Village in Jefferson, New Hampshire, and Storyland in Glen, New Hampshire. Storyland is one of those 1950s storybook type parks with a lot of charm, a lot of cool rides, the polar coaster. You've got the Roarosaurus, which is a Gravity Group family wooden coaster. Just a lot of cool, a flume ride. It's got everything. It's a total package. And then Santa's Village, as the name would suggest, is a Christmas theme park. Absolutely one of, and I say this like when, after you're done listening to this episode, go research Santa's Village, owned by the Gaynor family. One of the best kept secrets in themed entertainment in America. Attention to detail on every level, pristine, amazing rides, an in-gate water park, which Storyland has as well. Just amazing. And they added a new Vekoma family coaster last year too, which is a perfect fit for them.
Yeah.
And then the last major park in New Hampshire, one of my all-time favorites, is Canobie Lake. Canobie Lake Park, and I don't know if in the UK you guys call them this historically, but it was built as a trolley park. And what trolley parks were is they were amusement parks that were built by the trolley lines at the end of the line, essentially to encourage ridership through the whole line of the trolley, but especially on weekends. So they were built as picnic parks and people would have to ride the trolley out there because a lot of them predate the automobile. That, of course, is no longer the case now. But Canobie Lake just drips of charm. It's got neon. It's got amazing theming. It's sort of like out of Roller Coaster Tycoon. They have a building like a hot dog that sells hot dogs. They have a popcorn building that sells popcorn. So
amazing.
Just spectacular. Amazing wooden coaster called the Yankee Cannonball. It's a Philadelphia Toboggan Coasters ride from the 1930s. It moved to the park from a park in Connecticut, and it's just taken care of beautifully. And then on my list here, the last two parks, then we shift over to the upstate New York area, the Adirondack Mountain area. There's a Six Flags Great Escape, which is another, it's sort of the sister park to Storyland. They both opened in the 1954, 55 era around there. And Great Escape wound up getting purchased by, at the time, Premier Parks, which eventually became Six Flags, and still carries with it a lot of its original storybook theming. So it has the old story houses. It's got, and some great rides. It has the Comet, which is a world famous Philadelphia Toboggan Coasters wood coaster that moved there from a park in Canada called Crystal Beach. It just, again, another park. It just drips of charm. It doesn't feel like your typical Six Flags park, like the typical food beverage. Everything is just, it's more homey. It's more intimate. You can feel it dates from the 50s. It has a ghost town area. So like an old Western town, which, you know, who in themed entertainment doesn't love the Western theme, with a log ride and all that. So definitely a full day park. And that sits right near the Lake George, New York vacation region, which is similar to the White Mountains. And then just 3 hours north of there, you have the amazing city of Montreal in Quebec, Canada, which is home to La Ronde. And La Ronde is another Six Flags property. It sits on maybe the most spectacular site of any theme park in North America. It sits on an island in the middle of the St. Lawrence River, with the Cartier Bridge runs right over it. So you access the park either by exiting the bridge, halfway over the bridge, they have access ramps, or you could take the metro. There's a metro station on the island. The park sits on the former 1967 World Expo ground. So it was originally a World's Fair, and then it grew into the park it is today. And it's best known, I would say, for Goliath, which is one of those B&M, not quite hyper coasters. It stands at about 160 feet, but it's an airtime machine and just a beautiful location. And you know what? It's, for me, I used to go to the park, and it was cool for me visiting a park when English wasn't the first language, right? That was theme park where everyone spoke French. So it was just a cool experience. And Montreal is just a world-class city. So
So all of these parks you've just mentioned, do you reckon that's like what, a week long itinerary, a couple of rest days in there? Could you do that in a week, or is that too much? Do you need a little bit longer?
I would say if you picked and chose some of them, if you eliminated Great Escape and La Ronde, you could probably use Boston Logan and you could do the trip in a week and enjoy some time in Boston. Otherwise, I would say total 10 days should do it. So maybe a week and a half.
And if you were flying into America and then you did want to go over to Montreal, how simple is that to sort of cross the border into Canada? Is that just a case of queuing up? Do you need to do more paperwork?
No, it's basically have your passport essentially, and as we can discuss now or later, really, when you take your trip to America, I can't speak from experience because I haven't crossed the border in the last year where people have reported it's become more difficult. But just have all your documentation, have your passport ready. Maybe print out all of your hotel reservations. I know it's weird to print things these days when everything's usually on your phone, but have it in a folder ready to go. This is my car hire confirmation. These are my hotel reservations where I'm staying. Your flight itinerary so the agent can see when your return flight back to Europe is. So it's just, I find it easier, even if it's overkill, just to have all that stuff ready for the agent to see.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's something that does get brought up here. It has been brought up certainly more recently as a concern for people who are thinking about traveling to America. It almost puts them off in some ways. So yeah, if you can reassure someone to say just get your documents in order and make sure you're carrying them with you, then there are some amazing places that you can go and visit in the US, and we're going to carry on looking at them and going through them. So we are on the northeast coast of the US. We are moving slightly southwards to your homeland. You're a New York City guy.
Yes.
And I mean, I've never been to New York. Have you been, Kev?
No, I've never
No.
been, but it's on my list of American destinations for sure.
I
So
think it's
absolutely
on
love to go someday.
and that
almost
deserves its own
everyone's.
episode on CityCast, we'll call it. Look,
Okay, we'll do that.
so
Yeah,
let's
we'll we
yeah
will yeah we'll definitely do that, because I mean, it's
New
so
York
many
is every bit, if not more, overwhelming than going to London. I find London very easy, actually, but New York can be overwhelming because, again, it's very spread out, and everyone wants to do the typical sites that they read about growing up, the Statue of Liberty, Empire State Building, and my thing for first visit to New York is pick one observatory. Don't go crazy. You don't have to go to the World Trade Center and the Empire State Building. And Hudson Yards, go to one. Pick the one that suits you best. There are five or six of them. You could Google them. I don't have a particular favorite. I used to really like 30 Rock, which is not the tallest. It's only about 700 or 800 feet, but there's a large rooftop observatory, and you're right in the middle of all the buildings. You see Central Park. So, and you're right in Rockefeller Center. So if you have to go into that tourist zone where you're having to elbow people to get your way through, knock everything out in one shot, I'd say. The best part of the best parts of New York are the outer borough neighborhoods, going to Brooklyn and maybe going on one of those pizza tours where they take you to the old school pizza places.
Oh,
A lot of Manhattan, so you have to be careful. Like in
nice.
London, you can fall into a tourist trap, and you think you're eating authentic fish and chips, but if I took one of you guys, you'd say, "Oh, this is rubbish. I'm not eating that."
Okay, well, yeah, there's probably a million questions we could ask you about New York. We'll have to get Kit back on for that, actually. He got married in New York, so he's a big New York fan, so yeah, maybe come back to that one. But in terms of coasters in New York, obviously the most famous one to me is, of course, the Cyclone at Coney Beach. Something you wrote down.
Absolutely.
Rid it. Was it your first coaster?
Coney Island is about a 45-minute subway ride from most parts of Manhattan, so it's reachable by mass transit. And in fact, if you're staying in New York for that portion of the trip, definitely do not have a car hire. It's sort of like London. They have the toll. They toll you now when you're driving through downtown Manhattan, lower Manhattan. You don't need it. It's just you're going to sit in gridlock all day. Use mass transit. The New York subway is the best in terms of layout and service. It's also the only subway that I'm really aware of that charges a flat rate per trip, regardless of how far you go. So if
All
you're going
right.
all the way to Coney Island, you pay one fare. So it's actually, and you can get a Metro card and load it up just like you would an Oyster card or what have you. Although now I love that London has the tap in and tap out on your credit card, which is really the best. But so yeah, Coney Island is it. I would say it's at least a half day that you want to block out for that. It is the historic boardwalk. You have Nathan's Famous, which is a famous hot dog restaurant. Everyone's pretty well heard of that here in America, and probably a lot of people overseas. The Cyclone is the centerpiece ride. It's the arguably the most famous roller coaster in the world. Dates from the 1927. It's a triple layered twister, and over the course of the past decade or so, Great Coasters International and several other consultants have come in and done such wonderful work on it and smoothed it out. And some people would argue they ruined it, but I think it's running better than ever. It's rewritable. Its pacing is great, and it's just fantastic. And it's very cool how it's sitting right there on the street, right? You pay your $10 and you go ride, or you can get it as part of a wristband package with Luna Park. The only other thing I would say about Coney Island, it makes it kind of interesting, I think, is that you have multiple operators there. So Luna Park, which is a subsidiary of Zamperla, they have the main, the biggest park in the center. So they've got most of the coasters are under their umbrella. The Thunderbolt, which is the vertical lift, beyond vertical drop. It sort of looks like a Eurofighter if you're looking at it from a distance. You have a Spinning Mouse. You have a launch motorbike coaster. And then you have the Volare, which I know it's the ride that Flamingo Land has that not many people are huge fans of.
Hero. Yeah.
I will say that this particular one is the prototype from originally operated at Elitch Gardens in Denver, Colorado. And when Zamperla moved it to Coney Island, they spent quite a bit of money retrofitting the restraints. So it's actually, of the Volares, it is far and away the most comfortable one to ride. So
I mean, that might not be a high bar, but...
It's not something you need to necessarily dread if you're going for the credit. And you have the Wonder Wheel, which is part of Dino's Wonder Wheel Park. It's a separate operation, so separate ticketing, a pay-as-you-go, which is the original coaster wheel, we'll call it, where you have 8 gondolas on the outer ring that are stationary, and then you've got the 16 on the inner ring that are actually kind of roll back as it goes around, kind of like the wheel at Disney California Adventure.
I'm never getting on one of those. I mean, I hate Ferris wheels anyway, but they are just insane.
When they slide back and forth, and you wouldn't be good with that with the heights, would you, as well?
That's why I don't
being
like
high
wheels.
Up and the carriage just slides.
A normal Ferris wheel's bad enough, especially if you're in one, you know, one which swings, and you're in with someone who decides to try and swing it. Absolutely not. Okay, so I'll be avoiding that one. All the rest of it sounds cool. It sounds to me, it's like the quintessential American seaside amusement park. It's just like, it's what we were fed as like, hey, look at this is what amusement parks are. It's cool that it's still there and it's still standing.
And I'll tell you, my first visit to Blackpool back in 2015. I got Coney vibes when I went there. I said, this is Britain's Coney Island. It's the people's playground. Everyone is welcome. It's inclusive. There's no, financial classes don't exist. Everyone plays, everyone is welcome. Mm-hmm. And that's very much what Blackpool is. Mm-hmm. It's a place where everyone can come and, have a nice holiday and enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me. You go from being in the middle of Manhattan in 45 minutes, you could be swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. It's just
you haven't had to drive hours, have you, to get to, if you go to New York, you can get there relatively quickly. That's awesome.
Yep. And then just running down the rest that I have here, Rye Playland is another classic park. It's a seaside park that's located on the Long Island Sound. It's about 25, 30 miles northeast of New York City. You can reach it by train and bus, but this is one you're probably going to want a car for. So this is where your car hire would start. It dates from the 20s. It's one of, if not the first, organized amusement parks. In other words, designed to be specifically an amusement park with a long midway down the middle. They call it the mall. Prior to that, most parks were just kind of randomly scattered rides. Maybe there was a layout, but it wasn't very... strategically planned. Rye Playland, you could see it's symmetrical. You have the two carousel buildings, a derby racer on one side and the carousel on the other side. The Dragon Coaster is the big wooden coaster there. It dates from the 1920s as well. Just a lot of classic rides in a really great setting on the waterfront. And it has a boardwalk as well. It was the park featured in the movie Big, if that means anything to you, with Tom Hanks from the 1980s. And then we move a little bit. So just across the Hudson River from New York is the American Dream Mall, which opened right about when the pandemic kicked off, unfortunately. But it has turned around, and most of the mall is leased out now. I was able to visit there earlier this spring during my kids' spring break, and we had a great time. They have the Nick Universe theme park in there, which has, I believe, four or five coasters, including a launched Gerstlauer Eurofighter, which is a clone of Takabisha from Fujiku Highland. So very cool to ride that indoors with a little pop-up roof. So when you're held at the top of the lift, you're looking straight at the Manhattan skyline before you drop down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And just, you can imagine all the shops and restaurants and other opportunities in the mall, and it's weatherproof. So it's a good choice for a rainy day because it's good all year. Then we move out to Long Island. There's a small park called Adventureland. This is one I grew up going to. It's a small park. It's got a good mix of flat rides and coasters. There's a mock ride spinning coaster, a really good selection of flat rides. They actually have one of those ABC. I'm not sure what they're called. It's the ride that there's one in Austria or Germany where you go up the vertical lift and then you kind of make your way back down. Mm-hmm. I don't know the technical name of it. ABC Rides manufactures it, but it's the only one in the US that's there. It's called Fireball. So that it's a very family park atmosphere. So it's adults with kids. Mm-hmm. And it's an institution on Long Island, which is a sea of suburbia. So they do very well because they've got 2.5 million people right in their back door there. And then we move to parks that, you know, most people have heard of more so. So Six Flags Great Adventure, for example, that is the largest theme park in the Northeast. It has been since it opened in 1974, home to many, many notable famous rides, Nitro, B&M Hypercoaster, Jersey Devil, RMC Single Rail, El Toro, which is arguably one of, if not the best wooden coasters, either in America or the world. It's one of those Intamin plug and play wood coasters, you know, like others at Liseberg and overseas in South Korea. So there's a great mix. Of course, they recently, unfortunately, lost King to Ka, but there are plans on the horizon for new additions there. And the park is really looking better than it has in a long time. Six Flags is putting a lot of investment into infrastructure, into aesthetic. They put a gorgeous light package on the giant Ferris wheel, which Bex won't be riding.
Nope.
And it's still one of the best parks in the country. It's in a gorgeous setting in the woods, and it's got a great mix of flat rides and other attractions, a great log flume. So it's a must hit, and it's at least a full day. You can argue, say, it's a day and a half. And with the way Six Flags has all their parks now, their season pass with the all parks add-on is a real no-brainer for anyone coming to America, then it has a Six Flags park included on their list, because it's likely they're going to be able to use it at least two of these parks. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, you have Dorney Park in Wild Water Kingdom in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is one of the smaller legacy Cedar Fair parks, but it dates from the 1880s. It's a very old picnic park that's grown up over the years, and it's got a great mix of rides. It slips under a lot of people's radar. Steel Force is a great hypercoaster. Talon is one of the best B&M inverted coasters that no one talks about. And the bread and butter of Dorney is their water park. If you're a water park fan, Wild Water Kingdom has everything. It is just body slides, tube slides, wave pools, two wave pools, lazy river, you name it, they have it. And that's really the draw there. It's kind of like a Holiday World situation where people come from the water park and then they hit the rides after. So it's a great mix of different things. And then we can almost do a whole episode on this, but the New Jersey Shore has more rides, I would say, per capita than any region in the country. You've got, starting in the north, you have the town of Keensburg, then you go to Seaside Heights, and then you go down to Ocean City, and then you go to Wildwood. And these parks all have, you know, in the case of Wildwood, Maury's Piers has well over 50 rides on their piers. And it really has that kinetic energy after dark. You know, you've got the Great Nor'easter, which is the Vekoma SLC that was completely retracted about 5 or 6 years ago, that runs glass smooth. Great.
Really?
Light. Wow. Yeah, I'm telling you, it is. It's the only time you'll ride an SLC and you'll get right back in the queue.
Yeah. They want to come and sort Odyssey out at Fantasy Island.
And then Great White is their custom coasters, wooden coaster, which got a lot of investment this year, including two new GCI Millennium Flyer trains. And it's running faster and better than ever, I've been told. So And this trip that we just kind of discussed, and there are other parks, by the way, in New Jersey. There's Clementon Park. I mean, you can Google it and research it through roller coaster database. It's really what you want out of a trip. But I feel like what we just presented is another 7 to 10 day trip, depending upon how much time you want to spend in New York and what you're doing. But about half of that time, you'd need a car hire to do the parks outside of the city.
And I mean, a lot of people from the UK think of visiting New York around Christmas, November, December. I'm guessing all of these parks aren't open then. Is it just the indoor one that would be open if you were coming over for a sort of a Christmas visit?
The indoor parks obviously open, and then Six Flags Great Adventure has Holiday in the Park. I don't know if it's continuing this year, but in the past it has operated. And as part of that, I know that Nitro and Batman the Ride and several of the larger coasters do operate. So El Toro usually does not operate, if I'm correct on that. So,
well, we're hoping to go to New York at some point, potentially for a big anniversary or big birthday coming up. So we'll definitely be having those in mind, Mark. I'll be.
You're gonna get your ride on the cyclone.
You might need to give me a spreadsheet and like where all these things and how far apart they are. So that'd be amazing. Because I think definitely Great Adventure is definitely one on the, you know, those list of parks that you see and you go, yeah, I think that's one I've got to tick off, really.
Absolutely.
If we are in New York City, what is the one food item that we have to go and grab ourselves? What's the absolute classic?
It's gotta be a Jewish deli. It's gotta be a pastrami sandwich. Either Sarge's Deli on Second Avenue or the touristy spot, but I have to say it's just so dang good, is Katz's on House.
I've seen so much about that. Mm.
It is, and I'll tell you, they don't use a meat slicing machine. They have meat cutters. You walk up. When you walk in, they give you a ticket, and then they stamp the ticket as you order food, and that's how you pay when you leave. So if you lose your ticket, I guess you go, you know, maybe wash dishes or something. But it's the famous When Harry Met Sally scene. So you definitely put that on your radar. Pastrami sandwich and a knish. Very, very much a New York experience.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. Love that. Right. We are leaving New York City. Where are we heading? Heading inland a little bit?
Yeah. So we're going to head into, I kind of call this the Mid-Atlantic, but it basically spans from Pennsylvania down to Virginia. So this is another 7 to 10 day trip that's totally achievable. Some of these are crossovers, right? So I have Six Flags Great Adventure and Dorney Park on this list. Because you're going, you know, kind of through Jersey and then out to Pennsylvania, you can achieve that. Mm. But the primary goal of this trip is to spend one, if not 2 days, at both Hershey Park and Knoebels Amusement Resort, two of the absolute best parks in North America, hands down. They could not be more different from one another, and they're only 45 minutes apart.
Oh, wow.
So Hershey Park.
These are definitely on the list, Mark. These two, definitely. Hershey that Haunted Park, Mansion. One of the best ghost trains I've not been on, but it's always been told. John Wardley has mentioned it many times that it's probably one of the best out there. Yeah. So
let's start with Knoebels, because I could spend an hour talking about Knoebels. It's family owned, amazing family. It is the closest that I have visited in Europe. What is the park in Denmark, the oldest park in the world? Is that Bakken, just north of Copenhagen? I think Bakken is the park that reminded me most of Knoebels, just that picnic grove in the woods, very remote. So it wouldn't have been Tivoli, because that's right in the middle of the city. So Knoebels, you just drive through gorgeous landscape, through the hills and the forest and everything. And here's the park, and you park in this big grass field. There is no gate. You just walk in between trees. There's many of the pathways are paved. Some are gravel. You pay as you go, or you can buy an all day hand stamp. The rides are priced, I believe, $2 to $5 each or something like that. And that's for like a world-class wooden coaster, like the Phoenix and Twister and Pine Turns. They have Impulse, which is their Zier Tower coaster. And just absolute amazing mix of classic rides. The Haunted Mansion that Kev talked about, every year they enhance it. They add new tricks and effects. Black Diamond, which is a classic, another version of the ghost train. It's an old steel ride system from Philadelphia Toboggan Coasters that's enclosed in a show building. And it kind of, because of the rich history of coal mining in the area, it tells that story. And the whole ride was relocated from one of the amusement piers on the Jersey Shore back, I think it's, 15 years ago or so it has to be. But just amazing park, amazing food, and amazing affordability. Like they just put the package together that you go there with a family and you pay for what you want. You're not stuck paying an $80, you know, ticket at the gate. And then, you know, whether you ride something or not, here it's you do what you want to do. And I think their public, their marketing has really gotten across. It's the largest free admission amusement park in America. And, you know, ask anyone that has visited, it's top of their list. It just, you have to visit. And it's the quality of the rides and the atmosphere that combine. Now we move down to Hershey Park. Hershey, as far as I'm aware, is the largest independent park of any type in America. It's massive. It's got a huge coaster collection. And for a while, they had a lot of quantity, but not a lot of what I would call top tier coasters, headliner coasters. But just in the last five, you know, or say 10 years, they have added three top tier coasters. Any of these three could be the best coaster in any park. And Sky Rush, which is the Intamin hypercoaster, Candemonium, B&M hypercoaster. Yes, they have two hypercoasters from two different manufacturers in the same park. Try to figure that out. And then Wildcat's Revenge, which is the RMC remake of the Wildcat, which was Great Coasters International's very first ride, the Wildcat that opened in 1996. Mm-hmm. So this opened 2 years ago. And it, you know, pound for pound, it's right up there for my money with Steel Vengeance for best of the RMC hybrid coasters. And again, you mix in that whole park experience, flat rides, water rides, transport rides, and then the Chocolate World visitor experience, which is right there. That's free to enter. And they've got a dark ride that takes you through the tour of how chocolate is made. And then you get a sample at the exit. It's just, it's great. It's very, very America, I would say. You know, if you want a distinctly American theme park experience, Hershey Park really is tough to beat. And I would say for sure Hershey deserves at least a day and a half, if not 2 days, to really soak it all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned 2 days at Knoebels as well, but in my head it's quite like a small park. Is that not the case, or is it just because you want 2 days just because it's such an amazing place to be?
I would say ideally you do a day and a half at each. And Hershey has a ticket that allows you to do that. It's called the preview plan. So if you buy a ticket for a day, you can get into the park. I believe it's at 7:30 p.m. when they close at 9 or 10 p.m. So you get an extra free couple of hours the night prior to preview. Ah. Just walk around, try a couple rides, and map out your plan for the next day.
Oh, that's such a good idea. I love that, because you do when you go to a new park for the first time, you're a bit like, oh, right, okay. Especially if you've not watched many vlogs, like, am I going left or right? Where am I starting?
Sure.
I love that you get your bearings, and then the next day you can go and enjoy it. That's really cool.
Yeah, yep.
And I was going to say, Mark, as these are two quite popular parks, where's the nearest place you're going to be flying to or traveling to? Where's the nearest city? In order
this
to get
one,
to these
I would say is Philadelphia, because again, that's a British Airways code share with American. So you can fairly easily, Hershey and Dorney are about 2.5 to 3 hour drives from the Philadelphia airport. So it's not terrible. You can obviously, when you land, you could do a chill out evening or day in the city in Philadelphia, you know, go to the art museum or get a cheesesteak or any number of things. It's a fantastic city that really slips under the radar amongst American cities. So, you could definitely do that to kind of kick off your trip and
see the Liberty Bell, maybe if you're interested.
Yep, absolutely. All there. You could do the Rocky run up the steps and
that's there. Yeah, of course. I think that's a must, isn't it?
I would say, fair warning though, Philadelphia sport fans have a reputation for being very passionate about their teams, is the diplomatic way I'll say it. So
I won't wear my Green Bay Packers hat then, Mark.
Yeah, I would say it's more divisional rivals. Like don't necessarily wear a Dallas Cowboys jersey walking around.
Wouldn't.
Yeah, I think you're doing that, so
okay.
And then and then real quick, so from there we would move down, you're driving south through the city, amazing city of Baltimore. I lived there 13 years. Definitely a worthy stop off to see the aquarium or have a crab cake or some seafood. And then you're working your way down to Virginia. You pass through Washington, D.C., which could be your return airport if you wanted to use Dulles. And then you've got the combination of Busch Gardens, Williamsburg, and King's Dominion, both of which are within an hour and 20 minutes of each other, roughly. One is near Richmond, Virginia, and the other is in Williamsburg. And again, two absolutely stellar parks, large-scale theme parks that couldn't be more different from one another. Busch Gardens, Williamsburg, very much to me is our Alton Towers, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Except it's European theme. So it's sort of like America's take on European Hamlets. There's different hamlets in Germany and Italy, and the UK is the entry. So you have like a the Globe Theater is as you walk in type thing. Oh. And then you have an Ireland area, you've got New France. It's just really cool. And Oktoberfest has the big beer hall with live entertainment inside. And I think the legendary list of coasters at that park, we don't need to go through because everyone knows about Howl's Chariot and Alpengeist and Pantheon and the Big Bad Wolf, Wolf's Revenge, had just opened a couple weeks ago. It's a great park, great mix of attractions, definitely a full day. King's Dominion, another full day park, to be completely honest with you, amazing mix of rides. Raptero's the new launched wing coaster that just opened this year. Sister ride, say, to Thunderbird at Holiday World, same type of ride. And you've got a great mix of wood coasters, steel coasters, flat rides, great environment. And this year it's celebrating its 50th anniversary of the park. This park and Busch Gardens Williamsburg both celebrating 50. They both opened in 1975. So it's a great year to visit both. I didn't put it on the list, but I feel it appropriate to mention Six Flags America is right outside of Washington, D.C. And if you were to be making a trip this year, definitely put that on a list because unfortunately it's closing forever at the end of the 2025 season. It's a smaller scale Six Flags park, but I think it's got a great mix of rides. It's got an intimate hyper coaster, an amazing wood coaster in the Wild One, which dates from, you know, it's over 100 years old. It moved from a park in Massachusetts back in the 80s. And it's always sad to lose a park, but it's there and, you know, it's easy to wrap with that park and then you could fly home from Dulles.
Yeah. When you were talking about King's Dominion, there's a coaster there, which is why I think this park has to be on our bucket list, which I've been doing this series on TikTok with my husband, who's a fighter pilot, trying to find the coaster that pulls the most G. And you told me that coaster lives there. that is the place to go. Yes. Is it what? Because it's changed its name, hasn't it? Wasn't it in? It was Intimidator 305.
Yes. It was Intimidator 305. It was named after and themed to Dale Earnhardt, who's a legendary NASCAR driver who unfortunately passed away following an accident at the Daytona 500 race. So they at both Carowinds and King's Dominion, Cedar Fair did Intimidator or Dale Earnhardt themed rides. And the one at King's Dominion is an intimate giga coaster that's, you know, stands 305 feet tall. I believe its new name is Pantherian or something. And nothing else like it that I've ever been on. When you drop 300 feet into a ground hugging turn at 93 miles an hour. And I just lose vision for 3 to 5 seconds. I regain it at the top of the second hill. I don't know.
Graying out. Well, we literally just done a video for you, you know, last week about this, about graying out on roller coasters and what you can do as advice from a fighter pilot, how to stop yourself graying out. And it's all to do with clenching your buttocks. But I definitely want to get him on that to see if it has the same effect on him. And
I'm sure we'd be doing on that drop anyway. on that first drop. I'll be clenching everything.
He has been to Busch Gardens Williamsburg as a non-theme park nerd. He went over to Washington on a work thing, and they went to that park for the day. Just a load of fire pilots went and trucked around that park, and they absolutely loved it. He loves Escape from Pompeii. He said it was a great ride. He really enjoyed it. It wouldn't take much convincing to get him back there. And then if we can tag on King's Dominion as well as part of the same trip, then
it's easy. It's super easy. And then you also have some great beaches nearby. You can cross the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, back up the what's called the Delmarva Peninsula, which stands for Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. And then you've got several beach resorts. You have Virginia Beach on the south side of that, which is great. But then you also have Ocean City, Maryland, and all the beaches running up to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And some of those have amusement parks as well. Ocean City has several on the boardwalk and Rehoboth Beach has one as well. So that's another way that if you're looking at a map, you can kind of loop your way back to DC going on the peninsula and then crossing over the two bridges that go over the Chesapeake Bay. So change of scenery so you're not taking the same path out and back.
Yeah, I think it's cool as well if you are doing a trip like this with a lot of theme parks to have somewhere like with a beach or somewhere where you can go on a down day to just go, right, I'm not in a park today and I'm just going to like clear my head for a while because it does get a bit overwhelming sometimes if you're just doing park, 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 park. Right, that's us leaving the Mid-Atlantic, as you call it. We're moving on to Ontario, Chicago.
So this is another, this one I'd probably put more in the leaning more towards 10 days to 2 weeks, because you've got several large scale cities involved that you're going to want to spend at least a day or two in each, and some large scale parks that each will deserve or need at least 1.5 to 2 days. So that those days add up. So depending on which direction you want to travel, you would start or end in Toronto and Chicago. So that's kind of how I have this mapped out. It is pretty ambitious, but you get a lot of variety of theme parks and again, some great cities. So you start in Toronto, one of my all-time favorite cities. It's an international city, amazing, diverse food scene, amazing, diverse population, everything about the city I just adore. It's easy to get from the airport downtown for a couple city days via train. They have a direct train. It's super convenient, runs every 15 minutes. Getting into Canada is easy. I'd say probably landing there easier than US at the moment, maybe quicker, but it nonetheless, it's have your documents just like we talked about earlier. Canada's Wonderland is the big theme park. We'll talk about that in a minute, but there's also the islands off of downtown Toronto. There's a ferry that will take you to the Toronto Islands, and there's a small theme park called Centerville. And just the fact that you have to access this by ferry boat really adds charm to it. There's no cars on the island. There's some houses on the east end of it, and there's even a small airport on the west end. And the park has a cute log flume, a couple of a small kids coaster, a ghost train. So it has a decent amount. It's worth, you know, a couple hours on your city day. Canada's Wonderland. Let's talk about that. The most attended seasonal theme park in North America. The crowds this park draws have to be seen to believe. It's sort of like, I feel like everyone has said theme parks don't feel as busy anymore. Like I've heard people going to Alton Towers now, even on a weekend, it's not what it used to be. And there could be who knows what the ultimate circumstances are, but when you go to Canada's Wonderland, it feels like you're back in the 90s when there was no, you know, people weren't on their phone or on the internet. They were in theme parks experiencing things. This park will do, you know, 15, 20,000 people a day without sweating, you know, just every day, just day in, day out. It's such a dense population there. So this is one of those parks that a fast lane or their skip the line system is a worthy investment. I would say we'll talk about others down the line, but specifically Canada's Wonderland, Cedar Point and Kings Island are three parks that are good parks to invest for your full day. Just an incredible amount of coasters. I think they're up to 18 or 19 coasters. They're about to open Alpenfury, which overall, and I think I talked about this on a previous episode, is the sleeper coaster. It's just slipping under the radar, maybe because it's in Toronto and it's not in the middle of America. But this ride interacts with Midways. It interacts with three other rides inside of Wonder Mountain. It blasts out the top of the mountain, almost like paying homage to the old volcano, the blast coaster that used to be at King's Dominion. And the sheer amount of the footprint, it runs all the way from the backside of the mountain to the front gate and back. 9 inversions, double launch, it's a premier rides project. It just looks amazing, and I can't wait to get up there to experience this ride.
It's just started. Has it just started testing?
Yes, it started cycling a couple days ago for the first time.
Yeah.
So, I think they're shooting for Canada Day in my mind, which is July 1st. But I, you know, obviously that's not news or anything. That's just me speculating. But
yeah,
if I were them, that's what I would be targeting. Cause that's a big holiday weekend for them.
Makes sense. Yeah. Exciting.
The mix of attractions, you've got three giant B&Ms and Yukon Striker, Behemoth and Leviathan. You have the most comprehensive flat ride collection of any park in the world. And I say that with confidence. There must be over 24 major flat rides in this park of all different types and sizes. Some of them are one of a kind, like the Huss giant, I forget what they call it, drawing a blank on it, but it's a ride where the ride lifts up, it turns, and then all the gondolas drop at one time.
Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean. Yeah.
That's what Huss called it. The Jump 2. This was the only one ever manufactured, and just amazing mix of rides. And it is really a 2-day park if you want to see and do everything. So
that's
very cool. And then from there, we're going south. We're going to head down towards New York. We're going to cross the border eventually. But first, we'll spend the night in Niagara Falls because it's love a kitschy tourist town, right? And, you have Clifton Hill. which has all the typical wax museums and various attractions, go-karts, that kind of thing, terrible chain restaurants that we all love, you know, when we're traveling, because it brings comfort to us. But it's, and then you can walk down and see the falls, which is great, because you can kind of knock that all out in a couple hours. And then you sit in a little bit of traffic and cross the border into Niagara Falls, New York. And then we're heading, you've got several options from here, right? Because we have in the Buffalo, New York area, which is where this will leave you. You've got Fantasy Island Amusement Park, Six Flags Darien Lake. Those are options near Buffalo. Each of those could be a half day park, I would say. But then we're heading down the Lake Erie shoreline to a town called Erie, Pennsylvania, which is home to Waldemere Park and Waterworld. Mm. And Waldemere is another one of these gorgeous, family-owned, quirky, micro parks. It's very small for how much they have to offer. And the star here is the Ravine Flyer 2, which is a Gravity Group wooden coaster that dates from, I believe it was 2008, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just a dynamite ride. It drops down the side of the cliff. It flies over the top of a state highway out and back. It's just an all-time great wooden coaster, and one that, you know, not enough people from outside of the U.S. get to experience, because it's a bit off the beaten path, but definitely worth seeking out. And it's easy to do on this trip because it's right off of I-90. So as you're driving the freeway, it's an easy exit, and you could spend a couple hours or an all day there, really. And then from here, we're going south to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where you've got Kennywood Park, which I'm sure you guys have heard of. Over time, it kind of became almost the sister park to Blackpool Pleasure Beach, because the families that own the two parks are very close. Right. So there's a lot of similarities between the two. Yeah. Kennywood still has its Noah's Ark that's operating. A lot of classic rides mixed with new. So it's very much that, it's sort of like if Blackpool was not by the sea, and it was more like in a suburban setting. It's very cool. Phantom's Revenge is to me, the standout coaster. It was an Arrow Looper converted by Morgan into a hyper coaster, and just amazing. The second drop dives 240 feet down the side of a ravine, and you hit 80 miles an hour, and it's just amazing.
I remember seeing that on a really old documentary, which I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, called Coaster Mania, which was shown on the BBC over here. And it was showing loads of parks in America, basically following theme park enthusiasts. It's the only documentary I've ever seen which is about enthusiasts rather than parks specifically. And it was showing that park, and the guy, I think he was the MD at the time, or the marketing guy, and he'd kind of had this idea to build it down the cliff, and he talks about driving out in the middle of the night, going to the top of the hill to see if he could put this coaster through the Thunderbolt coaster, which is on the side of the cliff as well, and going, oh, I can do it, I can make it work, and saying how it would, in his opinion at the time, bearing in mind this was probably like 1995, it was always going to be the fastest coaster in the world, because you were cresting the top of that hill at speed. That wasn't the first drop. You had already built up speed, and then you were going down the biggest drop. Obviously now we know that coasters can go a lot faster than that, but a very cool documentary to see. And since then, Kennywood has been a park that I've really wanted to visit, because he really sold that drop to me all those years ago, and I've still never got to experience it.
Yeah, and if you recall, there was that fun argument between the Thompson family and the Henniger family. Was Big One or Steel Phantom, as it was called at the time, which is the faster coaster.
So there
was
jabbing
back and forth, but it was all in good fun. You know, it's obviously enthusiasts win in the end as these rides are built. So
exactly.
The more
American.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then just east of Pittsburgh is a small Picnic Grove park called Idlewild, which is a very unique, charming experience that has a storybook land walkthrough. It has a full water park. It's got two coasters, a classic 1930s junior wooden coaster, and a one-of-a-kind Vekoma Wild Mouse. This is the one that operated at Alton Towers, if you guys recall, in the corner back in the 80s, the towers. So it still has that weird tilted lift hill that actually is from when the ride operated at Wiener Prater. Where it was enclosed in a rotating tunnel to really throw people off, which would have made me nauseous, I think. But either way, it's a great park, great mix of rides, beautiful setting, creek running through the center of it. Definitely worthy of at least a half day. And then from here we head west, and this is where we're going to hit a lot of heavy hitters. So you've got America's Roller Coaster, Cedar Point, Sandusky, Ohio, and this is at the top of the UK enthusiast list, including Bex.
My trip got canceled.
And my friend Harry sent me some photos. He was on work over in America, and he sent me photos of when he was at Cedar Point. And I was like, why? It's like, guess where I am? And literally this panoramic view, and there's like literally all the rides and all the coasters. And I'm like, yeah, we need to get there at some point.
That has been my bucket list park for about 25 years. But I do have to say recently, and maybe you can fill us in here, I've been seeing a lot of negativity from people who are visiting Cedar Point saying the operation's not great, the park's not running as it should be. I don't know if this is just the same as us moaning about on towers. But it does make me a little bit nervous when I'm seeing a lot of enthusiast circles over there going, Cedar Point's not, it's not doing what it should do.
I still think Cedar Point does a great job, and they're not just a park. They're almost like a small city because they have the whole peninsula. I think they're up to 5 different resort hotels, plus the campground that they have now in their portfolio up there. They've got a separate gate water park. They have a lot, right? And it's a lot to operate. And I understand people's expectations. Our ride should be up all the time. Cedar Point has similar challenges to Black Bull does, the winds. Winds will dictate downtime depending on what direction they're coming from. Whereas Big One can't operate when the wind is coming from, I think it's the southwest, because they're afraid the train will saddle after the far turnaround. There's the same thing. So if the wind's coming from one direction, you might see Magnum down. If it's coming from the other direction, Raptor might be down. So it's very unpredictable being by the seaside, as you guys can imagine, as anyone who's been to Blackpool knows. You don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes and it'll change. Cedar Point, you definitely want to block out 2 full days. I would advise investing in Fastlane Plus for at least one of those days so that you kind of have that insurance in the back of your mind that, okay, we're going to have one day where we're going to have minimal wait times, and then maybe make that your second day. So your first day, you're just kind of getting your lay of the land and you're riding things that have manageable waits. And there's a lot of times you can go to Cedar Point when the wait times are manageable because, you know, they go daily in early May and schools don't let out until late May. So if you can manage a visit on a weekday in early to mid May or late August, because they stay daily right through our Labor Day holiday, which is the first Monday in September. Most schools in Ohio and the region go back in mid August. So you can really, won't need fast lane. You could just kind of have your way with the place. I do advise, Bex, as I told you, stay at Hotel Breakers or Lighthouse Point. Stay on the peninsula for your first visit so you can, that feeling of being able to walk to your accommodation from the Midway in 5 to 10 minutes after a long day is priceless. It's not, you know, it's one of those, especially for a first visit, totally worth the investment. And you guys, you know, we don't have to spend much more time on Cedar Point, but the ride collection is really unparalleled from a coaster standpoint. You just have so many headliners. It's hard to know where to start.
Can you promise that Top Thrill will be open?
Have you been on Top Thrill too?
I can't promise that Woodstock Express will be open because I don't work there. it's one of these, they do the best they can, and they want all the rides. That's the thing that people have to remember. Parks don't close rides because they want them to be down. You know, there's still elements out of their control. It could be there's supply chain issues. There's all these, I'm not making excuses. I'm just offering up, you know, people should think outside the box and not just say, oh, the ride's down. This isn't the way it used to be. Well, nothing's the way it used to be. Everything's different in 2025. So if you can't go to a park with the intention of having fun, maybe find another hobby is the advice I would give overall.
And there's plenty of other big coasters there as well, isn't there, Mark? So you're not like missing out, are you, really?
You even there, Kev, their B tier rides, like Magnum is spectacular. It's like no other ride you'll ever go. It's imperfections are what make it perfect because it dated from a time when engineering is not what it is now. Right. So, I mean, it has crazy airtime in a very different way on those triangular hills at the end. You've got something for everyone, I think, is really what it comes down to. And it has the feeling of being at a resort because you have the boardwalk, you've got Hotel Breakers, you've got really good food and beverage for an American theme park, which we're not really known for having great food in parks. Cedar Point has it, you know, whether it's a sit down, they have a hibachi steakhouse in the hotel. They've got all, you know, the different offerings from the farmhouse and frontier town to the Grand Pavilion on the boardwalk. So it's just there's a lot for everybody. So definitely two full days, though, so that you're not overwhelmed. 2.5 days would really be ideal in the event weather becomes an issue and you have some ride delays.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can kind of go through these quicker here. I don't want to drag it on too much, but as you're heading south through Ohio, you have the Columbus Zoo, which has a small amusement park, and it's a spectacular zoo, worth at least a half day to a full day. If a zoo is your thing, it's a great midway point from there to Kings Island. Kings Island itself, legendary park. I think everybody on the podcast has heard of it.
Yeah.
Home to lots of iconic rides. Probably top of the list would be the Beast, the longest wooden coaster in the world, currently the second longest operating coaster in the world. Night rides, they have so many good night rides. The Beast is the obvious one, but Diamondback, Orion, Adventure Express, the Bat, they all provide amazing night rides because of how the rides kind of push out from the park into the forest, away from the park. So,
is it where Banshee is as well, Mark? Is Banshee?
Yeah, Banshee's
there as well.
Yeah, huge, large-scale B&M inverted coaster. Mm-hmm. It's just a great park. Mystic Timber is one of the best GCI wood coasters ever, I think. You know, just runs flawlessly. It's like the Phoenix, a modern-day Phoenix, essentially, that no matter what the temperature is, you're going to get a great ride. So then from Kings Island, which I would say you want to do at least a day, if not a day and a half, we go 2 hours down to Louisville, Kentucky, and Kentucky Kingdom, which is along with Kennywood and Idlewild and several other parks, is now under the Hirschen Family Entertainment umbrella, which is the Dollywood group, which is, you know, amazing that, you know, Hirschen is expanding their territory, essentially, and they've added a lot more properties. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with those. Kentucky Kingdom's two top bill coasters, Lightning Run, which is the Chance Rides mini hyper coaster. And I don't remember exactly what they're calling it offhand, but it used to be called, it's the Rocky Mountain Construction hybrid coaster there. Great airtime filled ride, in-gate water park, like most of these parks have, which is a very popular thing in America, is including the water park with the theme park. So a lot of these parks have that, which works in your benefit if you visit during the summer, because a lot of the crowd gets pulled to the water park. That leaves the coaster lines manageable.
So okay. Interesting.
Then we move about an hour to the west from there into Central Time Zone. And there's Holiday World Splash and Safari, and home to the best trio of wooden coasters on Earth. And there's no competition. And I usually have to be diplomatic about this, but I just attended Hollywood Nights with a few friends a few weeks ago. And there's nothing like riding the Voyage at night. There's just nothing. It brings, you know, everyone just comes into the station with their jaw on the floor, just like, what did I just experience? It is absolutely the ultimate wooden coaster experience. There's no way around that. And the care that they put into these rides are very aggressive, is amazing. They invest a lot into them. The water park is critically acclaimed. They call themselves the water coaster capital of the world. So they have three separate pro slide water coasters. Two of them have the magnetic launches, and one is a water jet. Spectacular, and really fills out. It's a full day experience doing all the water park and the dry park. And I don't have you guys haven't been to Holiday World or
no? I was just going to say, well, the riding the Voyage at night. So how often can you do that? Is that just for like a very specific week or so, or do they open late quite a lot?
Yeah, I think they have relatively late operating hours on Fridays and Saturdays, especially as we get more into late July into early August. And then they have a Halloween event, which it's dark by, say, 6 o'clock. So I think they're up until 8. So you get a solid 2 hours of night rides.
That's good.
Otherwise, like the Hollywood Nights event is the way, if you really want night rides, because you get two straight nights of ERS on the wooden coasters and Thunderbird and select flat rides around the park too. So,
oh wow.
Holiday World is Christmas themed, right?
It's themed to four holidays. So they've got the Christmas,
because
it was Santa Claus Land originally. And then it rebranded to Holiday World in 1984. So they've got Halloween, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, and then Splash and Safari is its own theme. So really cool. And then from here, we're heading north. We have Indiana Beach, which is in Monticello, Indiana, which is about halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis. It's very much like a boardwalk park in the middle of Indiana. So there's a lake that was created by them building a dam, and it created a very dense amusement park. So there's a boardwalk. Most of the rides are built out over the water. There's a swing ride. There's three separate wooden coasters, including the Lost Coaster, Superstition Mountain, say that fast, which is a one-of-a-kind wood coaster dark ride hybrid with an elevator lift. It's just crazy, crazy fun and unique and very, it just no other ride like it that I can recall anywhere in the world. Really good food, great atmosphere, a lot of cool games, and they always have live entertainment, live bands, and another water park that's right there if you want to purchase a ticket for it. So from here, we move up to the west coast of Michigan. So this is taking us a little bit out of the way, but totally worth it for a ride called Shivering Timbers at Michigan's Adventure.
Yeah, and this is another one.
Park. Yeah. So this is one that's important to me because I started my career at this park. Right out of uni, I took a job there because I wanted to work in the industry and see what it was. So I drove out to Michigan, got an apartment, and I, along with their operations team, we opened Shivering Timbers in spring of 1998. So I spent quite a bit of time there that summer, and it's a small park. The park's really all about Shivering Timbers, but it's a super clean park, really friendly staff, and well worth going up there for this ride. It's just an airtime issue. If you like airtime, that's all this thing does. It's just straight out, straight back, helix at the end. So you really can't go wrong. And then from here, we're going to loop around the bottom side of Lake Michigan. It's about a 4-hour journey to the Chicago area. And this is where our trip's going to end. So you can see why this is a 2-week trip because we've got a lot of moving parks.
We've covered a lot.
And it's, you know, the thing is you can also take these trips, by the way, and divide them up. So if you wanted to fly to and from Toronto, you could do Canada's Wonderland to Kennywood and then go back to Toronto, or you can go to Chicago and do the other. So I'm just trying to offer up what's in the region. So Six Flags Great America is the big park in Chicago. And, There you've got, you know, a lot of very famous rides. You got from the American Eagle and Viper, wooden coasters. You have Goliath, which is the RMC. You have Raging Bull, which is one of the best B&M hyper coasters anywhere. And this year they just debuted Wrath of Rakshasa, which is a B&M dive coaster, which has a really cool layout and a cool theme to it as well. So that's very much a full day park. And Chicago is my personal favorite city in America. And the food, the culture, the people, the neighborhoods, it's just, for me, it's just everything a great city should be. It's New York on a more manageable scale. It has great mass transit and it's easy to get around. And, you know, you can easily spend a day or two just exploring and, you know, get a deep dish pizza, get a Chicago hot dog, Italian beef, all the good stuff. So
I was going to say, what's the must have food item that you're going to recommend in Chicago? Is it the deep dish pizza? Sounds like
I would go Italian beef and Chicago style hot dog first.
What's Italian beef?
Italian beef is like it's basically roast beef that's thinly sliced and then it sits in its own juice and then they put it on a French roll and they'll take the whole sandwich and they'll dunk it in the jus. And then they'll put what's called giardiniera, which is a hot pepper mix, vegetable mix that has some jalapeno in it. And it's just delicious. Yeah, it's really...
That does sound good.
It's a very Chicago thing, you know, just one of those things. You can get it in some other markets, but to get it in Chicago is the way to do it.
Yeah.
We talked about not wearing my Green Bay Packers hat in Philadelphia. Yeah. I would not be wearing my Green Bay Packers hat in Chicago, Mark. That's a no-no.
That's probably a good idea. So.
I get a lot of attention.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, that is definitely some food for thought. We've covered a lot of America there, actually. We've done the whole of the East Coast. We've gone into the center. We've gone back up north to Canada. We've done Cedar Point. We still have a long way to go, too far to go, actually, for this episode. So I think, Mark, what I'm going to do is get you to come back, if you wouldn't mind, and carrying on these little road trip ideas, because I do think they are excellent for giving us some food for thought and letting us plan these big American trips that maybe seem a little bit overwhelming. We've still got to, of course, go to the West Coast. We've got to go to California. We've got to cover Dollywood. We've got to cover Silver Dollar City, which I know is your favorite park. One of your favorite parks.
That's right there. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many more that we can still cover. So what we'll do is we'll get you back for another episode. We'll carry on this conversation and carry on looking at these US road trips that we can all go and do. I've currently, I think, got there's two that I really want to go and do. Obviously, I've got to go and I've got to get the Cedar Point one in. That's just got to happen at some point. And I really want to go and do Busch Gardens, Williamsburg, and King's Dominion.
And the fighter jet G-Force coaster at King's Dominion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it needs to happen. Thank you so much, Mark. Hopefully this has given you some food for thought. If you've been thinking about planning that big American theme park road trip and you haven't known where to start, or if you hadn't really thought about it, you just thought you'd just go to Orlando, maybe this has given you some extra ideas. Hopefully it has. There is so much more to see other than Orlando. As great as that is for us as British tourists, I think if you are roller coaster fans, theme park fans, we've got to go and explore some of these other parks as well. Thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed it, please do give us a rating. Let us know what you think. And if you haven't already, if you subscribe, you're going to get a notification every time we release a new episode. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.